show is on in less than 1 minute.
Fly! Fly, you hear me? Give my creation! Fly!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Get countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
Your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show. America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome to the Guy James Show. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. Going to try and have an informative and entertaining show for you today. As always, we do a little informing, a little entertaining, whatever we can do. Hey, all you folks up in West, by God, Virginia today. Almost heaven. Yes, having your primary today, and I hear the turnout's pretty good. Should be interesting to see how it comes out. One of my favorite tunes, John Denver. Almost heaven, West Virginia. Blue Ridge Mountain, Shenandoah River. Oh, yeah, I love that song. Always had a little group. Not always, man. For a while, had a little group, and we used to sing that song now and then. You sing a lot of John Denver songs. But anyway, congratulations to all the folks up in West Virginia today. I know you're hitting the polls hard, and it'll be interesting to see how it turns out. Probably not relative to how things are finally going to turn out, but anyway, it's good to know that the folks in West Virginia had a chance to express their views on the primary today. How you doing? Did you have a good weekend? I did. I worked all weekend, so I guess that's a good thing. I don't know. I had to fill my car up today. How's gas in your area? It's crazy around here. Just in the area where I live, not too far from where I live, the closest three gas stations to me have regular at 389. That's the 87 octane. 389. And yet you go, oh, 5 miles down the road, you can still get it for 372 or so. 17 cents a gallon difference. Quite a huge difference. But my, what a jump. Went up 10 cents last Friday. Who's going to be the first one to break the $4 barrier? Well, I know in some parts of the state they have already, right? In some parts of the country. We've broken it a long time ago on premium gas around here, but just on 87 octane, it's 389 most places, but like I said, a couple of places around here, 372. Maybe even a penny or two less than that at Costco, I'm not sure. I don't know how many of you have still seen these kinds of things. Years ago, nobody ever imagined that gas would cost $4 a gallon, and least of all the companies that manufactured those old meter-style pumps. You know the kind I'm talking about that don't have the digital numbers on them, but the old numbers that roll around and, you know, little gears and so forth. It's estimated that there are about 8,500 of these pumps still in service in the U.S., and mostly they're at the mom-and-pop service stations, and the owners of these things are now panicking because the dials on these contraptions can't go above $3.99. That's it. So service station owners from coast to coast are caught in a bind because they're usually operating in areas with low volume, meaning that replacing these pumps with modern equipment is just not financially feasible. So what do you do if you're a ma-pa operation? Another problem, many of these machines can only tally sales above, up to $99, $99.99. So owners of the larger SUVs and vans and trucks and tractor trailers often have to leave the station on tanks that aren't full. Imagine that. Stop in, fill her up, and for $99.99, you can't fill it up. And so the people that own these ma-pa stations, if they don't want to pay the cost of replacing the pumps, which runs about $15,000 a piece, they can always opt to use half pricing if the state regulators will allow it. This shows the price of a half gallon of gas, which is subsequently doubled. God, we're getting into a high-rent district with that, aren't we?
What's it going to be? How high will it go? And how soon?
I see oil today currently is $125.70 a barrel. It had dipped down into the $123-something a barrel for a while, for a 42-gallon barrel. Man, no end in sight. We're screwed, aren't we? Isn't that pretty much it? We're just screwed? How has it affected you? I know how it's affected me. Do you still go out and eat very much? Do you still go out and eat at all? Can you? You know how it is in a restaurant. You used to go out and two of you go down to a nice little family restaurant and get the meatloaf blue plate special and walk out for a bill for $10 not all that long ago. Now if you can go out and eat for less than $30 for a couple of you, you've done very, very well. Really amazing how pricey that is. Movies, forget about it. Price of movies nowadays, how do people afford to go? How do people afford to go and buy popcorn and candy and drinks in a movie? $4 for popcorn, it cost them a quarter to make. I mean, it's outrageous. We're getting screwed. That's all. Screwed with a capital Roo. But no, entertainment's down. I know around this area here, they're squawking. Entertainment's down. Hotel usage is down. The airport, the visitors are down, and we depend on that here in the Southwest Florida area. Oh, this economy is bad news. Bad news. Oh, before I forget, I do want to let you know we got probably one of my favorite guests. No question about it. He's one of my favorite guests. A guy I've talked quite a lot to over the years, the past 5 or 6 years, and we're having John Dean on Thursday of Watergate fame. And nowadays, his fame is his prolific writing. He's had the books. I'm looking at my bookshelf here. I think I've got them all. Worse Than Watergate, Conservatives Without Conscience, Broken Government. Now he's got this new book out, Pure Goldwater, and it's a really good read. Those of you interested in history will certainly love this new book. And we're going to have John on with us Thursday. Yeah, Thursday at the top of the second hour. So do keep that in mind. You won't want to miss out on hearing John Dean. All the big news over the weekend. Forget the fact that we've had some people killed in Iraq. Why do I always catch myself? I almost say Vietnam almost every time. I guess because of the similarities. But yes, we had some people killed in Iraq over the weekend, and there's a lot of Iraqis killed and all that. But, you know, that's nothing. That isn't news compared to the wedding that took place in Crawford, oh, my God, Texas. The Bush girl's wedding. Now, I'm sorry. Jenna. Was it Jenna? Is that her name? I don't have anybody to ask here. I think it was Jenna. There's Jenna, and I think the other one's named after her grandmother, isn't she, Barbara? Isn't that the way it is? Jenna and Barbara? I could be wrong. Anyway, they had a wedding down there in Crawford, Texas, and I guess they had it out in the backyard or something. They had a couple hundred guests, and the people in Crawford were selling mouse pads with their pictures on and all that crap they usually sell with the, you know, that sort of thing, no matter where you go. If you go to Plains, Georgia, if you go to Hope, Arkansas, if you go to any place the president was, they sell crap, you know, with their pictures on it. And Crawford, Texas is no, right, a little store right there on the corner. They got the main road that runs through there. It's not far from Waco. If you don't know where it is, I don't know. If I had to guess, 25 miles from Waco, maybe something like that. You go out of Waco, and it seems to me head west, and then head north on this road and you come into Crawford. Anyway, the main road through town's got one flashing stoplight. I don't think you actually have to stop at it. There's a big green elevator on that side of the road. Anyway, on the other side, on this Prairie Chapel Road, I think it's called, there's this little store on the corner. And they're the ones that sell all the crap. So if you're ever in Crawford, Texas, just happen to be driving through, be sure and stop there and get yourself a load of that crap that they sell in there. But they had this wedding. I got sidetracked here. This wedding showed that this wedding showed that big money can't buy you good taste. That's for sure. Did you see Laura Bush in that? Now, I'm not one to make fun of how people dress normally and all, but this is the President of the United States' wife. She it looked to me, and some of you gals may disagree with me, because I'm sure I heard that, what's the guy's name? Was it Oscar De La Renta? I think that's her, who I heard designed her dress, the mom, Laura Bush's dress. But it looked to me like she bought that dress off the final sale rack at the local Goodwill store. That's what it looked like to me. Man, that was one ugly dress. Now, the girl, I guess her wedding dress was okay. Why am I talking about this? Does anybody know? Does anybody care? No. Probably not. Oh, man, I don't know. Just can't seem to quit talking about the Bushes. They are so popular, you know, and everybody loves them so much. I don't care. Really, the Bush family, they're old news, I guess, now. But I really think that no matter how much Georgie dances between now and the time he leaves office, I don't think he's going to be able to escape his legacy. ELO says on the chat room that her dress looked like furniture upholstery. That reminds me of that old Carol Burnett scene where she came down the steps dressed in the curtains. Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah. That is what that dress looked like. Looked like those curtains. If she had a curtain rod going straight across her shoulders, yeah, that's what it would look like. Okay. Thanks for that. That gave me a chuckle, Yellow. But I was talking about Bush's legacy, if you can call it that. I see the people down at SMU now don't want the damn library of his on their campus. I mean, they would be embarrassed to have it there, the true academics. You'd like to think the president would leave some sort of a legacy and be some sort of a scholar, have some sort of be deserving in some way having a presidential library on your campus. But this guy, he's fighting to maintain whatever kind of a legacy he thinks he's got. And wouldn't you love to know what he thinks his legacy is? Wouldn't you love to peel open Junior Bush's brain? You'd have to do a lot of peeling. I mean, this would be like a many, many layered onion. You'd have to get down to the last final little core of the onion even to get to it. Because there's not a hell of a lot there, you know that. But wouldn't you love to know what he truly believes is his legacy? Does he really think that he's done a good job, or is he just playing out the clock, thinking, oh man, I've had a rough time of it, people have been against me, history's been against me, I had bad timing, this guy screwed me, that guy screwed me, and things have gone wrong, I meant well, or I've been a total F up. What do you think? What do you think his true thoughts are about his legacy? Or is he arrogant enough to think that by attacking the little country of defenseless, pretty much, country of Iraq, that he saved the world from extremism? Do you think that? Does he think that? Is he arrogant enough to think that and conceited enough? I think maybe he is. I don't know. But you've got his daddy here on the one hand, who, you know, wasn't the best president we ever had, but he didn't leave office hated. He wasn't popular, but he didn't leave the office hated, I don't think. I never hated him. I didn't like him much, but I didn't hate him. And so we have Junior Bush following on his heels, always trying to keep up with Daddy, and you'll never convince me that isn't part of what that war, you know, the Junior Bush's occupation. You'll never convince me that's not what part of that's about, going into, don't worry, Daddy, don't you worry, that Saddam Hussein, that bad guy, you know, I'll get him. He threatened to have you killed, Daddy. I'll get him. I'll show you. I'm a man too, Daddy, just like you are. You've always never thought I was much of a man, Daddy, but when I got to be president, I got that Saddam Hussein. Yeah, you didn't get him. I did, so maybe I'm a man too, just like you are, Daddy. Maybe that's it. Yeah, that might be it. Probably is it. But he spent his whole life trying to keep up with his daddy. He cannot. He could not, even on an intellectual level. And let's face it, his daddy isn't a paragon of intellectualism. But he's a fairly smart guy. So many people make the mistake of thinking these people that went to Harvard and went to Yale and all that are necessarily brilliant people. Folks, many of you know that isn't true. Maybe some of you suffer from that misconception, but it is not true. And I don't think anybody's ever proven it any better than Junior George W. Bush, that you don't need to be very damn smart to get in to Yale. Not smart at all. Who was it? He couldn't get into the University of Texas. Was that one? Or was it SMU or TCU or one of those schools, the half-ass schools down in Texas? Excuse me, all you Texas people. I'm on an anti-Texas thing today for some reason. There's some nice ones down there. Anyway, it's just absurd. So many times you see that behind someone's name on their resume, and you say, well, I went to Yale or went to Harvard or went to Brown or went to, you know, Princeton. Well, yeah. And so, does that mean that you're smarter than somebody else? Does that mean, yeah, in some cases, you know, if you went to MIT, I'll take that from you, all right? If you went to MIT and you want to tell me you're one of the sharpest knives in the drawer, absolutely, I'll go along with that. You're not getting into MIT if you're stupid. George Bush would never gotten to MIT. Hell, I wouldn't have got into MIT. I don't think. I never tried, but I don't think so. Was pretty good in math, but anyway. Maybe Georgie's helped us all out. Maybe Georgie's done us all a favor. Academia now can relax. A lot of schools know that they're... there's idiots in Yale and Harvard and Princeton and Cornell and all those schools as well. And Georgie's certainly proven it. And if you go there, you can get in on Skull and Bones. See, what an honor. What an honor. His daddy was a part of Skull and Bones, Junior Skull and Bones. I think Prescott Bush might have been Skull and Bones. I have to tell you this. Not something I'm particularly proud of, okay? Not something I'm particularly proud of, but a member of my family. Yes, it is true, I swear. A member of my family was in Skull and Bones. So I know this genius thing isn't, you know, a little bit suspect. True, I swear it. A member of my family was in Skull and Bones. Now that's a revelation, isn't it? How did I get going on this, Skull and Bones? I guess I was just talking about Junior and his legacy and how pathetic it really is. And that they're going to build a multi-million dollar library for him down there at SMU. And it's just too bad. And I guess what I was getting at here today was he's grossly mismanaged every single aspect of government, from the war to the domestic economy to Katrina to everything that you can screw up. He's screwed up. I mean, I don't know of anything. Do you know of anything? Do you know of anything he hasn't screwed up? I mean, we got spying on all of us now, just, you know, willy-nilly spying on us by intelligence agencies, domestic spying all over hell and back. We've got wars going on every place. We've got him wanting to start another one. Our economy is completely down the tubes. We've got gas almost $4 a gallon. People being thrown out of their homes left and right. So what would it be that would be this man's legacy? I'm searching here. Help me out. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. Junior Bush has a legacy. If you're a Republican now and you're a Junior Bush guy, and so you think he has something positive on his side of the ledger, your legacy is blank. What is it? What is it? I mean, it's too bad nobody ever sat this guy down and explained to him how the government of and by and for the people is actually supposed to work, because I don't think he has a clue. Never learned how to listen to the citizens, never listened to the citizens, never gave a damn, evidently. So I believe that from now till the end of time, that the Junior Bush administration is going to be a benchmark that'll represent the absolute low point that the United States government can reach when it totally, as he has done, divorces itself from reality. And as he also has successfully done, managed to evade all accountability. Remember that? One of the platforms, we're Republicans. Personal accountability. Yes, pull ourselves up by our bootstraps and remain responsible for all that we do personally. Because we're Republicans. What kind of accountability is this administration taking for anything? Anything at all? Tell me. Tell me what? Tell me what they're accountable for. Tell me that they have not weaseled out of every last thing the Congress has tried to ask them for members of their administration to go and testify in front of Congress. They have not. They have ignored subpoenas, and something tells me that Karl Rove is going to be ignoring another subpoena here soon if the Congress has the guts to actually subpoena him. That's another thing. It has helped that Junior Bush has been able to avoid accountability. It has helped that he's had a bunch of weenies on the other side of the aisle that have been afraid to do anything to him, that have abandoned the cause to the chance to impeach the man when they had the chance last fall. Earlier than that, almost 2 years now, a year and a half, a year and 7 months, whatever. So that hasn't helped. It hasn't helped one bit that the spineless Democrats have really, by their lack of action, have been complicit in this lack of legacy, of a decent legacy for this Bush administration. But he will be forever remembered as the low point for so many years. Warren G. Harding was labeled as the worst. Hoover was labeled as the worst. But now, and probably forevermore, because this country's even gone, and I say forevermore because either this country's going to shape up and fly right now, either we're going to get a leader into the Oval Office that will take this country back uphill instead of sliding perpetually downhill during this entire neocon era that we've gone through, except for the respite during the Clinton administration. The horrible damage that this neoconservative era has done to this country. Either we are going to stop the bleeding and get this country headed back up to the heights again, or we won't function as a nation anymore. That's why that I say forever in our history, he will remain the benchmark for the lowest of the low, because we can't go any lower than we're at right now. We as a nation cannot go any lower than we are and still survive. Whoever is the next president of the United States, and it's looking more and more like it's going to be Barack Obama. If Barack Obama is the next president of the United States, by God, he better be ready to lead, and he better be ready to lead this country in a fashion that hasn't been done since FDR. Because we're in just as serious a trouble right now as we were in those days. Maybe worse. We've got two wars going. We've got people dying. Yes, not in the numbers that they were during the Second World War in Europe and in the Pacific, but we've got people dying. We've got our nation's economy being destroyed by a war. At least FDR had the good sense to raise money for a war, realizing that it took extra money out of the economy, something that this administration hasn't as yet figured out and doesn't intend to. So this Bush administration has evaded all accountability, and they've done so with the help of the Democrats, to my everlasting shame as a Democrat. People say sometimes to me, well, you know, these parties are both the same. Why are you still a Democrat? Well, I'm still a Democrat because I know what the party's supposed to be. It isn't all it should be right now. But I'm going to remain a Democrat. I'm going to remain on the left because I know what the party should be. And I will work till the day I die to get it back to what it should be. I will work to get it back to stand for the principles it once stood for. Of the people, by the people, and for the people. Instead of General Motors, GE, the telecoms. It sickens me. So, if Barack is the next president, and it appears to me there's a 99% chance he will be, he better be ready to be a leader like no leader we've had in a very, very long time. He better be ready to convince the American people that we need to band together and work hard and overhaul Washington, D.C. He better be willing to convince the American people that instead of just the middle and poorer classes of Americans, that all people need to make a sacrifice if we're going to spend money on a war, if we're going to defend ourselves and spend the kind of money that we are in the Department of War, better known as the Defense Department these days, but it is turned back into a Department of War since we're into preemptive wars now. But if there's going to be a sacrifice, it better be shared by everybody in this country. Not just the middle class, the working class, and the poorer class. It better be shared all across the board. But I'm willing to say right now that no matter what the polls say right now, no matter what the polls are saying today, that I do believe, in my heart, I do, that John McCain is going to get his ass kicked in this next election like no presidential candidate's gotten it kicked for quite a while now. That's what I'm going to say. I think I'll head for Vegas, see what the odds are, and put a bet down on that. And I hope Brock gets off of this stuff. Now, I'm all for working things out with the other party. I am. I believe in compromise, as long as they see it my way. I'm a little bit like that. Sooner or later, I can have some sense pounded into me if I'm wrong. I'm smart enough to understand that through dialogue with people long enough. You know, I guess we're all like that, aren't we? Initially, you get in a conversation with somebody. No, by God, I'm right. I'm right, and you're wrong. I'm right. I'm right. I'm right. I'm a little bit like that. I know a couple of people are listening right now going, no, you're a lot like that. But I am smart enough to listen to reason, and when good reason comes along, I am able to process it and understand that I'm wrong and add a new chapter to my book and go on from there. Can always be convinced that I'm wrong if I am. If I am. But one of my problems with Barack Obama so far, and I will, just like James Carville the other day said, as soon as this primary is officially over, as soon as it is officially over, I'll be happy to sit down and write out a check to Barack Obama's campaign. I'll be happy to do so. But I am a little bit concerned about the message that Barack has been putting out since day one. And it's one of the reasons that I voted for Hillary Clinton in the primary. And let me explain where I'm coming from on this. Yes, I think it's a good thing to be an inspirational leader. I do. Franklin Roosevelt was an inspirational leader. When he got out and had his fireside chats with people, people listened. And through his great powers of persuasion and his genteel manner and his logic and his good reasoning, he was able to convince the American people, most of the American people, to follow him, to do what needed to be done. And he was able to, when he put new proposals out, he was able to explain them, let the people know what was good and bad and all this, and he got a loyal following. He was a beloved leader in this country. And much of that was because of his powers of persuasion and inspiration. He was a great inspirational leader, was Franklin Roosevelt. And so Barack Obama has adopted a lot of that, but for me so far, he's been lacking a little bit on substance, and I am hoping that now that the general election time coming around, and I'm assuming for argument's sake today that he will be the nominee, no matter what happens in West Virginia today, or Oregon, or Puerto Rico, I think that he's going to have to be a little more clear on his positions. I don't think it'll be enough to just get out and inspire people. We're going to have to talk about issues. I'm going to have to be more substantive on issues. And so far, he has not done that. And one of the messages that I've heard a lot from Barack Obama is about nonpartisanship and working across the aisle with people. Well, Barack, I don't know. You haven't been around the Senate very long, and you're a fairly young man, and you may be a hell of a lot smarter than I am. But don't expect the Republicans to sit down and play patty cake with this new Democratic president the way the Democrats have done with George Jr. Bush. They'll go for the throat. They'll do it quickly. They'll try their best to destroy Barack Obama as soon as possible. When he takes his hand down from having it up from taking the oath of office, they're going to stick a shiv into him as fast as they possibly can. And they'll do it just as quick as they can so as to leave no false notions that there will ever be any cooperation from them. And that is the way it will be. How many filibusters now? 60? 58? 60? How many during the Democratic, when the Republicans had control, how many did the Democrats do? None? 60? None? 60? Does that give you any inkling at all, Barack Obama, that these people will cooperate with you in any way whatsoever? Oh my God, they were even willing to vote against a little Mother's Day deal they had going in Congress the other day. They're even willing to vote against that. So, don't expect to get cooperation from across the aisle. You will not get it. This is where Barack Obama and the folks say that he'll bring balance to our government through some sort of nonpartisanship are completely wrong. Completely wrong. Don't kid yourself. The Republicans are even now working on ways to totally thwart any efforts by Obama to do so in a nonpartisan way. If he thinks for one moment that they're all of a sudden going to start cooperating with anyone who doesn't see it 100% their way, then he isn't smart enough to be our president. But I think he is. So I think that he will, most likely, understand in short order what he's dealing with, and that he's not getting in the tank with goldfish. He's getting in the tank with sharks. That's what they are, and that's how they've acted all along, and they're not going to change. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. Why don't you just
give us a call. You know you want to. We'll be back in just a minute.
President Bush has talked about our staying in Iraq for 50 years.
Maybe 100. That'd be fine with me.
President Bush has talked about our staying in Iraq for 50 years.
Maybe 100.
If all he offers is more of the same, is John McCain the right choice for America's future? The Democratic National Committee is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
Here's the guy changing the way you hear music, Billy Shears.
Tune in to Night Sounds every Saturday night, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. You'll hear the latest in new music releases, special segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications with the sassy and classy Erica Richards. For requests and dedications, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. So tune in and stop by the chat room this Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Thanks for lending an ear.
Hello, I've had you on my mind for hours. There's no doubt, and there's no use wasting. How could I ever feel this way? There's so much left to say. There's so much on my mind. Sit back.
Tristan Prettyman and Hello. Hey, I like that song. Thanks to Billy Shears, our music director. That's the first time I've heard that, and I do like it. You never know what I'm going to like in music. But Billy and I have a similar taste. We've talked about that. We do. We have similar taste. Anyway, we get email here on the show, and it's some of it's really friendly, and thank you to everybody who does that. Hey, a big thank you to Stuart. Stuart, thank you very, very much. Thank you very much. Stuart knows what I'm talking about. But we get email, and some of it's friendly, and some of it's isn't, and some of it people are sending us information for us to digest and process, and we do that. And I try and read every bit of the email, and I try and get back as much as I can. But I got this email from Eunice, and I've got her zip code. I haven't figured out where that zip code is from. I'll have to do that. Anyway, Eunice sent me this one, and I hope it's not Eunice. I hope I haven't. Some people pronounce it Eunice, and some people Eunice. Anyway, Eunice, thanks for writing. And I did answer Eunice. And she ripped me up pretty good. The show we did last week with Larry Johnson. She said, how can you possibly criticize Obama for knowing a never-charged person who was a member of the Weathermen when you never mentioned that President Clinton pardoned two Weathermen members convicted of bank robbery involving the killing of a policeman? How on earth can you consider this fair reporting? You were at one time my favorite talk show host, and at one time I supported Senator Clinton. Also, how can you trust CIA operatives, Larry Johnson? Do they not carry out assassinations and to destabilize and overthrow democratic elected governments to support U.S. corporate interests? If you know or talk to a CIA agent, are you in favor of such practices? By your logic, we're responsible for the beliefs of those we talk to. Well, Eunice, as I mentioned in my response to that, no, I don't think we're responsible for the beliefs of those that we talk to. I am not responsible for what Larry Johnson said. He's a guest on the program. I didn't affirm nor deny anything that he said. I have reported on negative things about Barack Obama. I have reported on negative things about Hillary Clinton. I have reported on negative things about any of the candidates that came up. And if I have not been fair, I have not been anything on this show. No, I do not feel responsible for the acts of anybody I've dealt with. It is, I do know this. I do know the Republicans will use that Weatherman story on Barack Obama. And as I mentioned during this, throughout the interview with Larry Johnson last week, that is it is a story that must be vetted and vetted completely to the satisfaction of thinking people. They must know all the facts involved in it. Larry was bringing up some of the facts involved in it. And it's just something that needs to be done. Would I associate with William Ayers knowing who he is? Absolutely not. I think he's a despicable human being. Barack Obama may have had other reasons for associating with him. I don't know. But I did not condemn Barack Obama, nor will I condemn him. And I have not, I've condemned John McCain for some of his things. And I've said for Hillary some things she's said and done that I haven't liked once whatsoever. So I just try and be fair. I am not a reporter. I'm a commentator. If I were a news reporter, the show would be different than it is. But I am a commentator, many times stating my opinion, which I'm welcome to, and you're welcome to yours as well. And by the way, if you have an opinion you'd like to give us today, 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. And speaking of opinion, let me tell you that it is my opinion that there are some despicable people in Washington, D.C. And when I mean say despicable, I mean that in the very strongest of terms. And therefore, when I say that, ask the question perhaps, is there a more despicable man in Washington, D.C. than Joe Lieberman? I really mean it that way. Joe Lieberman, if you've listened to me for any length of time, you know that there's not a whole lot that
I value much more than loyalty. Loyalty is just everything. And sometimes I'm stubborn to a fault about loyalty. I have cut off my nose to spite my face many times when it's come to loyalty. But it's something that I highly value. And that's why I don't think there is a more despicable man in Washington, D.C. than Joe Lieberman. I had such high hopes that Ned Lamont would have defeated him in that election up there, which shows me that the Democrats truly don't want Joe Lieberman. It's the Republicans that voted him in since he ran as an independent ticket. He didn't have balls enough to run as a Democrat. Been a Democrat all of his political life, but when he knew his political ass was on the line, oh, he had to switch over and be an independent. Now, didn't he? Because, after all, his party never meant anything to him. The standards of the Democratic Party never meant a damn thing to Joe Lieberman, not ever. Or he would not have done what he did. He did not deserve to win that Senate seat back. It is a crying shame that Ned Lamont didn't beat Joe Lieberman. I was disgusted when Gore put him on the ticket. I thought, Al, what are you thinking? I didn't like him back then. I have not formed this opinion of Joe Lieberman just since that he's been on the McCain bandwagon. But when he comes straight out and says, and I'll paraphrase what he said, but it's pretty damn close, with Hamas endorsing Senator Obama, you must wonder, end quote, all the while out campaigning for John Sidney McCain III, is this not the most vile, reprehensible statement yet from a United States senator? Shouldn't McCain and Joe Lieberman be held accountable? And isn't it just absolutely disgusting that both of them have alluded to that Hamas is endorsing Senator Obama? Talk about guilt by not even association. If Satan himself came up and said that he endorsed Joe Lieberman, would anybody think Lieberman had an association with Satan? I mean, that's how silly this whole thing is. Absolutely ridiculous. My God, there's people overseas in organizations that aren't friendly to the United States. If they wanted to keep somebody from getting elected, they say they endorsed them. Who was it pulled that in the last election? They tried it against John Kerry. But he comes out and says, in that whiny-ass voice of his, that insincere, whiny-ass voice of Joe Lieberman, when he comes out and says, with Hamas endorsing Senator Obama, you must wonder. The people of Connecticut had a chance to yank this miserable bastard out of the United States Senate, and they failed to do so. And I am sickened by the sight of him, and since he made this comment the other day, I have never been more sick of him. When he starts that talk all the time at Joe Lieberman, let's back Israel, no matter if they engage in mass murder or not. That conviction of his, it's enough to make me puke. I despise the man. And now he says this about Barack Obama. Hey, Joe, I heard the KKK's backing you. Well, I heard through the grapevine that Saddam Hussein thought you were great. Idi Amin and Fidel Castro, too. Hey, Joe, I heard that Jeffrey Dahmer and Tim McVeigh were big fans of yours, too, you sick bastard. You don't deserve to be in the United States Senate, and I'm wondering when the people of Connecticut are finally going to sit up and realize that. Truth be told, I'd give a hell of a lot for Joey Lieberman to go on the ticket with McCain. Oh, I would love that. I would love it. Joe Lieberman. I'm Joe Lieberman. And I think Barack Obama, he might be
associated with Hamas. I don't know, but they endorsed him. So, you know, you have to wonder. Because me, Joe Lieberman, I wonder. Because I'm kissing John McCain's ass every day, 24/7. Man makes me sick. He just makes me sick. 866-546-5254. You know, we've had this terrible tragedy in the world, and I haven't even mentioned it, this horrible earthquake situation over in China. Who knows how many people are going to end up dead. Did you see the pictures on the news last night of them heading down the... Well, in Myanmar. I'm confusing the things. Did you see the pictures of them heading down that river? The Irrawaddy River in Myanmar. Horrible. Absolutely horrible. We've had a lot of disasters on this earth in the last few years. The tsunami, Katrina. There are reports coming out of China that there may be as many as 100,000 people killed. And that terrible story about the 900 children trapped under the rubble of what was once their school building. Man, got the Summer Olympics coming up in August. They're having their problem with inflation in China. They've got that epidemic spreading throughout the country that affects the youngsters. Now, as far as the Olympic our Olympics are concerned, the venue in Beijing, they say, was built to withstand an 8.0 magnitude earthquake. 8.0. This was what, 7.9? They lost 240,000 people in that earthquake in Tianjin back in July of 1976. So, terrible thing to befall humanity any place on this planet. Let's head on over to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Guy, hey, it's Sandra. How are you?
Hi, Sandra. How are you?
I'm all right. You know, I was just listening. I just couldn't resist calling. We were talking about that Joe Lieberman. I mean, isn't he the most disgusting? I hate him.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I know it's a strong word, but the sort of, they're so despicable with this Hamas stuff. To be honest, Hamas was an elected group. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This sort of servile business with Israel is getting on my last nerves. I'm sick to death of it. And what they're doing with Obama, you see that despicable op-ed implying that, oh, his father was a Muslim, he's a Muslim no matter what?
Yeah, he's... Yeah.
I mean, I would know. That op-ed is so disgusting. Well, I mean, they're trying to be on a DL, but they really are trying to push this line of his Muslim connection somehow is impacting what the hell he's doing now when a man has prostrated himself nonstop saying that he's a Christian, which I find despicable anyway. I wish he, you know, you can't be an atheist in this country. Your political career is dead. But they're really trying it with this sort of irrational hatred that Americans seem to have for Muslims, right?
They're gonna play that out for all it's worth.
No, it's really scary too because I mean, shit. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I don't really care if he was a Muslim. What the hell? This is America, right?
I wouldn't care either, but Reverend Hagee does, you know, and Rod Parsley.
There are so many disturbing levels to all this, you know, the sort of you know the irrational. Queasling sort of Israel thing is just, it's so over the top in this country. I think people here are more obsessed with Israel than the damn Israelis.
I think you're absolutely right. Of course, there are more Jewish folks that live in this country than do in Israel.
No, I understand, but I mean, I read the, you know, I'm not coming to it from some point of ignorance. I read the Israeli press because I'm so disturbed. So I go there, and they have more reasonable discussions in their damn press than we do over here about what the hell they're doing.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, Joe Lieberman, when that Ned Lamont didn't win, you know, I was crushed. I mean, I don't even know nothing about it. I live in California. But I was disturbed and crushed, You know, he just lied his way back into... I mean, please tell me the Democrats are going to get rid of his ass if they get a bigger majority. I swear, I want to see that more than I do almost anything.
Oh, if Reid doesn't have the guts to take his chairmanship away from him, I mean, he should definitely take his chairmanship after that remark about Obama and Hamas. Reid should just call him in and say, hey, bud, you're done. You're not the chairman anymore. I don't know why he keeps from doing it.
No, because that is just despicable. And not only that, but like you said, it's just a bunch of nonsense. And, you know, and I don't even want to go to the race card, but it's so hard in this country because I'm sick of this black man being made to cough up every time anybody of color speaks. You understand what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
I'm sick to death of it. It's just no one has to do that, but... black folks in this country, you know?
It'd be better if we didn't even know, wouldn't it? We just, we got a screen between us all, and we just hear whoever talks, and we don't know what their religion is. We just know their policies for the United States of America and their leadership ability, and if we didn't know what color they were and we didn't know their religious background, I'd feel better about it. We wouldn't have to have all this crap going through this stuff.
No, I mean, it's just, you know, I'm just sort of stunned at the... you know, simplicity of what they're trying to do and disturb that maybe a lot of Americans are sort of making that connection that, oh, it's Obama and it's Hamas, and so what they're saying must be true. When this man has turned himself inside out to become an Israeli supporter, which, you know, I'm disturbed by anyway, because I know back in the day Obama had some inkling of sympathy for what went on for the Palestinians. But he shut that totally down now.
It's terrible. I'm more in support of Israel than you are. Oh, no, you're not. I'm more in support of Israel. I mean, they fight over it.
Yeah, to the point where Hillary is saying that she's going to unilaterally bomb some country with nuclear weapons. Since when do presidential candidates decide who they're going to bomb? Oh, I forgot. Ever since Bush did it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just a nightmare,
and you know, if the conversation you and I are having right now were played on the evening news tonight, we'd both be condemned as anti-Semitic, right?
Oh yeah, no, you're anti-Semitic.
Oh yeah,
the whole nine yards, and you know, I'm supposed to scurry away and do what? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
I don't give a f.
No, it's just the way it is. I find it fascinating. I really do.
No, it is really fascinating, but it's so formulaic, and it don't even make any sense in a rational world. Because why should the U.S. Put their interests at risk nonstop for Israel? We don't do that for no one else.
Nope.
And it's just bizarro. It's like bizarro world because the relationship we have is something akin to what used to go on in South Africa. They are creating an apartheid state because they're going to be bred out of existence in 20 years. Let's be honest with it about Israel. They won't have the population to sustain their madness in a generation, right?
Yeah, and we've gotten apartheid going over there right now, and they're trying to exterminate literally the Palestinian people, and there's just no fairness to any of it, and I am just I'm so tired of it.
That's the only way they can is to run this sort of extermination, and it's a horrible thing to associate with that. You know what I'm saying? I don't even want to say the words because it's so sick. But they're going to have to kill a whole bunch of Palestinians in order to maintain their state the way they have it now because their population isn't growing at the same rate.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
You know? And I don't know. I just don't understand our policy isn't rational. It's not addressing what the realities are on the ground.
It's not something you can't understand. Hey, Sandra, I got to run. I'm coming up to news at the top of the hour. Thanks so much for calling. Always great to hear from you.
All right. Take care.
Yeah. Bye-bye. Yeah. You hear all these people trying to rationalize what goes on in that situation, but I have not heard anything to satisfy me yet on it. Well, hey, you're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. We're going to pause for news at the top of the hour, and we'll be back right after that, so don't go away.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Are secret agreements on union organizing between union leaders and companies good or bad for workers? That's a central question being raised by SEIU and Unite Here's secret deals with employers that designate which workers in a company can be organized while giving up the union right to strike. Unite Here President Bruce Rayner told the Wall Street Journal that these deals are a major advancement for the labor movement that have brought tens of thousands of workers into unions. But dissidents within organized labor say they are top-down deals that exclude rank-and-file workers and that too much often can be sacrificed in return for simply increasing union member numbers. SEIU and Unite Here have such secret deals with Sodexo and Compass and possibly other companies. The Wall Street Journal says the agreements give these companies the right to pick which of their facilities can be organized and which can't. SEIU's Andy Stern says these deals were crafted because the old ways of organizing weren't working, and under these deals, workers are guaranteed a union voice. A union representing federal workers is calling on Republican presidential candidate John McCain to support full funding for the Department of Veterans Affairs. Jesse Russell reports.
Just 5 days after endorsing Senator Barack Obama for president, the American Federation of Government Employees has called on Republican presidential candidate Senator John McCain to provide full mandatory funding for the Department of Veterans Affairs. McCain is a ranking member of the Senate Armed Services Committee, and AFGE President John Gage said in a statement that the senator is in a position to do something that will have long-range impact on the health care of his fellow veterans. McCain has been pushing for a voucher plan so veterans can receive health care at private facilities out of the jurisdiction of the Veterans Health Administration. AFGE has launched a series of ads that suggest such a program could undermine the VHA and would result in the privatization of veterans' health care. To bring the issue to the public, the Federal Employee Union has launched a series of ads in key swing states. Here is today's economic report. When President Bush was asked 4 months ago about a projection by analysts of $4 gasoline in the spring, he responded,
I haven't heard that.
Someone failed to inform the President of the United States that gasoline prices were rising. Now, with gasoline at $4 in many places across the United States, what does he have to say? He told CBS News Monday, it's just too darn bad because this economy was doing fine, and then we had the housing issue, and then this gasoline issue is making it even harder for the economy to recover.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Hey, John, I just heard you got a new computer. Congratulations.
Thanks. It's the coolest thing.
What will you do with your old computer?
I don't know. I guess I'll just throw it away.
Well, my company just bought new computers, and we decided to donate the old PCs to a place that gives them to local schools. You can do something like that.
Seriously, who would want a 3-year-old computer?
Hey, it might be great for someone else. Computers can be refurbished and reused instead of ending up in the trash. By passing it on, you can help the community and the environment.
If you're replacing your company's IT equipment or you're finished using your personal computer, pass it on to a local organization that accepts computers. To learn more, log on to epa.gov/pass it on. This message was brought to you by EPA, Dell, Intel, HP, NEC, Philips, and this radio station on behalf of EPA's Plug Into eCycling Partnership. EPA does not endorse any commercial services or products of these groups. For information on all partners, log on to epa.gov/plug in.
James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life, you hear me? Give my creation life.
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. 6... 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast.
Hello.
for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Welcome back to the Guy James Show, everybody. Thanks for joining us today on this Tuesday. Ah, yes, coming to you live from beautiful Southwest Florida, home of the blue waters and sandy beaches. Yes, indeed. Beautiful place. It is a beautiful place. What was I going to mention? Oh, resident artist Robert Rauschenberg died yesterday. I think he was, 82 years old, lived out on Captive Island. Famous artist. Big news here. I was not a fan of his art, but anyway, he's a very wealthy man, lived out on Captive Island, which is, as the crow flies, probably 5 miles from here. Very beautiful place. Hey, today in history. Today in history was a great day for Confederate President Jefferson Davis. Yes, sir, he became a free man after spending 2 years in prison for his role in the American Civil War. How in the world did he get off with just 2 years? Do you ever wonder about that sort of thing? Now, I know all you Confederate folks, you're not liking what I'm having to say about that, but how did he get off with just a two-year sentence? And look at Robert E. Lee. He got off with nothing. And in 1913, the first airplane with a bathroom was launched. And I'll bet you never would have guessed this. What country was it that made the first airplane with a bathroom in it? Huh? Now, keep in mind that they flew it over the city for a test flight. I wonder why it says that. The first airplane with a bathroom was launched in 1913. It was a Russian transport plane, which was test flown over Petrograd. What I want to know is, why did they fly the first plane with a bathroom over the city? And, okay. And on this date in 1967, my boyhood hero, Mickey Mantle, hit his 500th home run. Man, 500th home run, Mickey Mantle. What a great baseball player Mickey Mantle was. Had his career cut short, had bad knees. And on this date in 1981, they tried to assassinate Pope Paul II. He nearly escaped assassination while riding in an open automobile in St. Peter's Square. He was shot twice, but recovered after emergency room doctors worked on him for 5 hours. And what else have we got here? Okay. In 1991, Nolan Ryan pitched a record 7th no-hitter. I wonder if Nolan was juiced up. I doubt it. And in 1998, India did a second round of nuclear tests. The first round had been done 2 days earlier, and within hours, the U.S. and Japan imposed tough economic sanctions. But India claimed that the tests were necessary to maintain India's national security. Well, don't we all say that?
Yes, we do.
Wouldn't it be a nice thing if we could eradicate those from the face of the earth? Yes, yes, yes. I probably sound like a peacenik when I'm saying that, but I do mean it. I sometimes think we don't care about what goes on in the rest of the countries around the world, but, you know, India got that. Now, see, how many nuclear powers are we? We know South Africa has a nuclear bomb, I'm sure. I'm sure I read that someplace. England, France, the U.S., who else? China, of course. India, Pakistan, who knows who else. Everybody got to have the big bomb. Wouldn't it be just great if we could get rid of them all? Sure would for me. But we Americans, you know, we've got a war going on, an occupation. We've got a war in Afghanistan and an occupation of Iraq going on. Neither of them are going well. Afghanistan, I was reading a whole big story about that today. The Taliban is coming back to power. almost had them out of there, and they have come back to power. I see where the U.S. military now has been ordered not to destroy the poppy fields because the people need the income. So they're going to continue to manufacture as much heroin as they can off the poppy fields in Afghanistan because the people need the money. Now, I don't know that I've heard anything more ludicrous in a long, long time that we've been ordered not to destroy their poppy fields. It's an inherent danger to anybody who touches the stuff. Crime involved with it, death involved with it, misery involved with it, the human condition. And yet, here we have American presence in Afghanistan, and we are not going to destroy their poppies. Yeah. We Americans are a strange bunch. We are. And it appears to me, you know, over the weekend there was hardly any news. It was mostly wedding news over the weekend and all, and what little there's left over the primary. We're somehow insulated from the war that's going on and the misery that's going on in the Middle East. Does it really matter to most of the people in this country? Does it? Does it matter that... And you've heard it said, well, you know, compared to the other wars, we sure haven't lost many people in this war, so it's not so bad. It's only a little over 4,000, so it's not so bad. You'd wonder, when watching the news, if there was war still on. The occupation in Iraq and the war in Afghanistan, you'd wonder if it was still on. And I guess the big question I have nowadays is, does it matter to the average American? Does it matter at all? I think not. It doesn't seem to be having a big impact on average Joe and Sally citizen here in this country, and yet it goes on and on and on, no end in sight. But why is it that many Americans, when watching the news and seeing people being killed by shooting or from rockets or by planes dropping bombs, why is it they assume these people have done something wrong? You ever notice that? Them damn Iraqis, them Sadr City people, I'm always blown away when I'm talking to any of the right-wingers who insist that as many people are killed on the mean streets of some of our big cities each day or murdered in Iraq. You've heard them say that over and over. Well, there's people killed in Detroit every day. There's people killed in the barrios in Los Angeles every day. That's, you know, it's not so bad over there. Or when they condemn the fact that two or three or five or six or however many of our young military personnel are killed in Iraq, the neocons come back and say, well, there were that many killed in Washington, D.C. today. You've heard that argument, right? Obviously, when defending Junior Bush's war and McCain's surge policy, these insanely loyal right-wingers display thinking that, at the very least, is just warped. Consider the fact that over the past few years, hundreds of thousands of Iraqis have been killed by violent means. And there are estimates, and you've seen them too, that place the number of deaths as high as 1.2 million Iraqis, with a couple of more million of them forced out of the country to protect the lives of themselves and their families. Does anyone really, seriously want to compare those numbers with those killed by violent means in our cities? I hardly think so, if you're sane. This is a totally ridiculous argument, but yet I hear it almost every day from those who are hanging on to this. Oh, we're winning. So what if a few Iraqis are killed and that their country might become, you know, so that it might become free? Yeah, that's a great argument, all right. The more of them we kill, the freer they get, right? And another fascinating aspect to all of this is that most of these same Bush-McCain defenders are willing to completely overlook the affiliation with the U.S. military of companies like Halliburton, in which Dick Cheney still owns stock, and KBR and some of the other immoral war profiteers, companies which have been absolutely proven to be ripping off the American taxpayer, and while doing so, endangering the lives of our military personnel. The answer is always, well, you know, somebody has to do it. And KBR and Halliburton and you know, maybe the only companies that can do this sort of thing. So we have to, even though they're criminals, and even though they've stolen from the American people, and even though in some cases they've murdered people over there and all, Blackwater Security and all that, we still have to hire them, you know. We need them. Wouldn't it be like hiring Al Capone to run the police department in Chicago because he was better at murder than anybody else? Wouldn't it be the same thing? And does anyone really doubt the reasons the entire infrastructure of Iraq was bombed out? Does anybody really doubt the real reason we did all that? With this precision bombing that we do, and all, did we have to subjugate the Iraqi people during that? No, the idea they said was to take out Saddam Hussein. So did that mean we had to bomb out their entire electrical system and their water system and their sewage system? Did we have to do that to take out Saddam Hussein? I don't think so. And why does anybody think that at least hundreds of millions of taxpayers' dollars and $1 billion worth of weapons disappeared in Iraq? You remember when all that looting happened? How could this have happened under a military watch? How could it have happened? I wondered at the time. But the more we read about it, the more we learn about it. How could that have happened unless there was, you know, some sort of calculated collusion? And or gross negligence. How could the looting of huge Iraqi military arms supply depots have been allowed if our leaders had not allowed it to happen? And I absolutely believe they allowed it to happen. I think about that, and I think about the people that have been running this war all along, that started it and have been running it all along. Wouldn't those among you, I'm talking about you, wouldn't those among you with the least military experience have thought that when the Iraqi military was disbanded, that the first thing our people should have been ordered to do was to throw up some sort of a protective perimeter around the thousands of bombs and weapons we knew existed all over Iraq? Especially when you keep in mind that much of the explosive looted during those days have been used to kill our own troops with the IEDs. I mean, this was shameless dereliction of duty by our leaders, or more likely something even worse, in my opinion. And you couple this with the fact that infants and young children and other civilians are dying by the score from all sorts of things, from malnourishment and contaminated water and disease, from unsanitary conditions. Every single day in Iraq as another side effect from the Bush-McCain war that McCain says is fine if it lasts another 100 years or longer. It's okay with him. And people are thinking about voting for this man? How could you? And then we're hearing from the neocons and their followers how the Iraqis are supposed to be so grateful to our armed forces for liberating them from the terrible reign of Saddam Hussein. And they're really pleased with the results of the surge. You go and tell that to those who were slaughtered in Sadr City the past couple of weeks. Ask that mother who held the mutilated body of her 3-year-old child if she's pleased with the surge. You saw the pictures. Ask the father whose family of 6 was killed when their home was decimated by rockets launched by U.S. helicopters last week. Ask him if he's pleased with the surge. And who's kidding who? When we're being fed propaganda that the Iraqis are happy with the thought of turning over their oil to whichever companies Bush and his Iraqi puppet government members pick. Ask them if they're happy with having foreign liberators come on into their country and destroy their schools and their homes and their streets and their jobs. And one other thing, something that's coming to light more and more, you read more stories about it every day. Ask them if they're happy about the huge child for sex business that's thriving so that families can keep from starving. I've tried and tried and tried to find something good to say about this whole sorry Bush occupation. And I want to think that there's some sort of silver lining to this horrible dark cloud, but I just can't. We found out recently that there's been a concentrated effort by the Bush administration to promote their occupation with ex-military leaders who are now paid lobbyists. And I'll talk about that in a little more detail a little later on today. But it's shameful actions. Shameful. And as such, the majority and the administration knows this, are against this war, and they want our troops quickly brought home. So there goes anyone's argument that this has been any kind of a democracy the past few years, and our troops are there because the American population wants it. This nation is becoming increasingly undemocratic. All the same, it might become a great democracy again, and it can, and has to have the power and maybe the will to do so. Think of all the troops that we've sent over there that have had moral and patriotic goals in mind. And think of how they feel when they find out everything that they fought for and all the good they thought they were doing is in jeopardy. It's such an ugly situation. I found a quote, and I couldn't agree more with Admiral Jean LaRocque. He stated, "I hate it when they say he gave his life for his country. Nobody gives their life for anything. We steal the lives of these kids. We take it away from them. They don't die for the honor and the glory of their country. We kill them." Our policies and the related action also kill countless others, mostly civilians. But as I started out saying a few minutes ago, it's unfortunate in this country, with so many people that you speak to, it's so unfortunate. It's sick that the lives of the Iraqis are absolutely irrelevant to a lot of people. Don't matter. They're foreigners. They don't matter. The torture we've engaged is doesn't matter. They're foreigners. Never mind that American lives will be in jeopardy because of it. We treat their people as being irrelevant. They'll treat us as being irrelevant. So tired of this. I know you are. I know the American people are. I can only hope that our weariness with all of this will be reflected at the polls this coming November. I only hope they'll know which party, remember which party started this, and I hope they'll remember that John McCain was a man that helped thrust us into this full force and was for it from day number one. And is all in favor of keeping it going for as long as it takes to realize whatever goal it is that he's trying to attain. He and these neocons of world supremacy of somehow, some kind, or trying to own all the world's resources in some way. The truth has to be spread about this election that's coming up, and I know many of you are not happy that Hillary Clinton isn't the nominee. I know many of you are, both sides are upset the way the primary has gone, and as I've said from day one, just don't forget who's sitting on the other side of the fence. No matter which one of ours makes it, and it's increasingly evident that it's going to be Barack Obama, just don't forget the demons that are sitting on the other side of the fence that have caused this ugliness in the first place. It's oh so evident that these people are masters of getting elected. Masters of getting elected. And it's more than evident to me that they will now engage in the most dirty kind of politics that you have ever seen. If you think it was bad against Al Gore, just wait till you see this. If you think it was bad against John Kerry, the 537 group, wait till you see what comes up this time. They'll have Obama dressed in a Mullah's outfit. They'll do anything they can. They'll pull every racist thing in the book that they can. This will be a no-holds-barred election, a fight to the political death for these neocons. They know it. They know the survival of this crazy Reagan neocon movement is at stake. And there is nothing that they won't do to win this election. You mark my word. Nothing that they won't do. There's nothing that they won't say. There is no accusation they won't make. That's why I've been somewhat surprised all along that so many people have said, oh, this primary is really rough. This primary is kindergarten stuff. Kindergarten stuff. You ain't seen nothing yet. All of you that have seen John McCain come out and make the statement that he would not engage in dirty politics, negative politics. Ah, that couldn't be funnier. That just could not be funnier. I remembered a great saying when it comes to this war that I think the American people ought to all read and take to heart and really think about what this means. One of the true heroes, and there are some heroes in this country that I've got great admiration for, and General Omar Bradley was one of them. He was a brilliant man. He was a man of great compassion. He was a great warrior. A great military tactician. And he said, and let me quote this, because this is important. We have grasped the mystery of the atom and rejected the Sermon on the Mount. Ours is a world of nuclear giants and ethical infants. We know more about war than we know about peace. More about killing than we know about living. I think with all of that considered, it's high time to learn again about the ways to live, not to kill. We're going to pause for a break. I hope you'll join us back in just a minute or two. Right after these words.
John McCain has done more than just embrace George Bush's failed policy in Iraq. It's actually his idea to escalate the war there. It's John McCain's idea to send tens of thousands more soldiers to Iraq and to keep them there with no timeline for bringing them home. The McCain plan to escalate, going from bad to worse.
Here's the guy changing the way you hear music, Billy Shears.
Midnight Sounds every Saturday night, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. You'll hear the latest in new music releases, special segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications with the sassy and classy Erica Richards. For requests and dedications, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. So tune in and stop by the chat room this Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Thanks for lending an ear.
Back to the last 26 and a half minutes of the Guy James Show. Thanks for joining us today. You can get in on the so far one-sided conversation by giving me a call at 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. We'll be glad to hear from you. John McCain, Straight Talk Express. I'll tell you what, that Straight Talk Express has taken quite a few detours so far. It's nothing straight about this Straight Talk Express. John McCain has gotten a free ride from the press from day one. He continues to get a free ride from the press from day one, the media. And I have no reason to believe he won't get it right up till the end. When I look at what the media did to Al Gore, when I look at what the media did to John Kerry, why on earth would I think that the media in this country would be fair to Barack Obama? Because they will not. But we keep hearing this John McCain, John Sidney McCain, the third Straight Talk Express, and he and Barbie doll, Cindy, whatever her name is, standing at the lectern, looking like the all-American couple. Well, not quite. And you hear the media, you hear the Tim Russert, you hear the Tweety Bird Matthews. You know, that McCain is a heck of a guy right there. You know, he may not be perfect, but by golly, whenever that McCain tells you something, you can sure count on it being the truth, can't you? Because he's a straight-talking guy. We really like John McCain because he's a straight-talking guy. Now, here's a man who swore he doesn't have anything to do with lobbyists, this John Sidney McCain III. I don't have any lobbyists in my campaign. Then we find out we have a lobbyist, a still active lobbyist, running his campaign. He has taking a hiatus from his lobbying job until the campaign is over now. Tell me that he doesn't make a few calls now and then. But we have McCain who says he just doesn't have much to do with lobbyists. And once again, we have a story coming out about him, that about his lobbyist friends. It's just hard to believe. Just last week, now, first we hear that McCain's picking of, or getting the endorsement of Hagee, Reverend Hagee, who hates everybody, hates everybody that isn't whatever religion he is. I don't know what is he, Pentecostal, something, I don't know what he is. But if you're a Jew, if you're Catholic, whatever, he hates you. No, that's not it, that's not how he says it. I love everybody, I just hate the, yeah, okay. So McCain says they aired. They didn't vet that whole thing good enough. And every time something comes up about somebody in their campaign, oh, I guess we didn't check that. We didn't check that out good enough. Well, here's one they really didn't check out good enough either. Aren't they tired of hearing about things they just didn't check out good enough? Last week, he picked Doug Goodyear, who happens to be the CEO of the Washington-based DCI Group, a lobbying consulting firm, okay? Another lobbyist. His campaign is riddled with, just everywhere you look, lobbyists. Everywhere you look. How about the guy driving a bus is lobbyist? I don't know. That street talk bus. But he picks this Doug Goodyear of this DCI group lobbying consulting PR firm to be his national convention manager. And so Michael Isikoff, a reporter I have a lot of confidence in and a lot of respect for, he decides to go out and check this whole thing out about this Doug Goodyear. And don't you know that Isikoff did some actual reporting on this Doug Goodyear and found out on Saturday that Goodyear's PR firm has... shall we say, a couple of PR issues. Isikoff says Goodyear is CEO of DCI Group, a consulting firm that earned $3 million last year lobbying for ExxonMobil, General Motors, and other clients. Well, that's bad enough to have that guy in your fold, right, another lobbyist. But potentially more, those are my words, not Isikoff. Going back to Isikoff, what he said, potentially more problematic... The firm was paid $348,000 in 2002 to represent Burma's military junta. That's Myanmar, folks. Which had been strongly condemned by the State Department for its human rights record and remains in power today. Justice Department lobbying records show DCI pushed to begin a dialogue of political reconciliation with the regime. It also led a PR campaign to burnish the junta's image, drafting releases praising Burma's efforts to curb the drug trade, and denouncing falsehoods by the Bush administration that the regime engaged in rape or other abuses. So, as it turns out, the McCain campaign, the Straight Talk Express, the campaign who has said from day one that they don't employ lobbyists and they don't have, John McCain said, and let me quote, "I do not have any lobbyists on my staff," end quote. By 5 p.m. Saturday, Goodyear had resigned. And even the Republican Party evidently thinks there's some pigs you shouldn't be caught putting lipstick on for money. Or, to be precise, there's some pigs that if you're caught putting lipstick on them for money, you shouldn't be seen to have a leadership role in a political campaign. Now, Goodyear is saying that the resignation was entirely his own idea, that he did it because he was unambiguously, it was unambiguously the right thing to do. But here we have a guy who's out shilling for a brutal, repressive human rights regime, and he's telling us what's the right thing to do? Wow. And this is another person that John McCain put on his staff. A man who lobbied for the government, the dictatorial government of Myanmar. The people that are refusing aid from other countries around the world to help their helpless citizens who don't have food nor drink at the present time. And have just gone through an unspeakable horror. And yet, their government, their dictator, is not allowing foreign aid to flow in. Not allowing foreign helpers to come in, emergency aid workers to come in and help save lives in that country. This is who Doug Goodyear lobbied for. This is who Doug Goodyear got paid $348,000 to represent. And this is the man John McCain hired to be on his staff. It begs the question, does this even matter to these people at all anymore? Does it matter at all? Do they care that they're associating with disgusting, filthy people like this? Or do they just take it for granted that everybody in Washington's on the take and will represent anybody and do anything? Is that how it is? Is that what it's become? If John McCain's the good and decent guy that the media would have you think that he is, wouldn't you think he'd come out and make a statement about this now and say, and be contrite and say, my God, I didn't know. I would never have anything to do with a person like this. But then again, we're talking about John Sidney McCain III, a member of the Keating Five. The Keating Five. 866-546-5254. I see we've got Bob Barr. One of my favorites, as you know. Part of the impeachment committee. Bob Barr. One of the most despicable men that ever walked inside the Beltway. He's from Georgia. He's seeking the libertarian presidential nod. That's right. Can be Bob Barr. Can Bob Barr become president? He thinks he can. Yesterday, the former Georgia Republican congressman, who was a thorn in the side of Bill Clinton during his administration, said that he would seek the nomination of the Libertarian Party. Not leaving himself too much time. The Libertarian Convention begins a week from Thursday. Still, Bob says that his plan to greatly reduce the size of government will probably resonate with voters that are sick of promises from Republicans and Democrats who failed to get things under control. That's right, Bob Barr can get it done. He said he would immediately cut discretionary spending. Has there ever been a candidate that didn't say that? He'll slash the budgets of the Education and Commerce Department and withdraw U.S. troops from Iraq. slash the budgets of the Education and Commerce Department. Now, let me see. Didn't mention the Defense Department there, or the Department of War that we should be calling it these days once again. Said he would cut discretionary spending, slash the budgets of the Education and Commerce Department. Yeah, that'll work. The Commerce Department out trying to get jobs, bring jobs in. Not that I'm defending every action they've made, because I'm not. They waste money. And the Department of Education. Our kids are falling woefully behind, and the Department of Education has made some terrible decisions and wasted a lot of money as well. But they're still needed. They just need a shake-up. They need to be set back on course, both of those departments. But Barr left the Republican Party in 2004 because the Bush administration failed to shrink government while eroding civil liberties in the name of the war on terrorism. Barr said he would also get tough with illegal immigrants if he wins the White House. See, now you knew he was going to be the fall of those damn... Yeah. While his dreams of becoming president are somewhat far-fetched, Barr could take votes away from Republican John McCain in key states. Well, yeah, he could take some away in Georgia. He could take some away in South Carolina. He could take some away in Alabama and Mississippi and Louisiana and Tennessee and Arkansas and Virginia. He could take some away there. Bob Barr. One of my favorite people. Ah, yes. I see the Iraqis have agreed on a Sadr City ceasefire. They've had a couple of months of fighting in Sadr City, and it hopefully would get some sort of a peace going there. The pact was agreed to by the United Iraqi Alliance. That's Iraq's main political bloc, and representatives of the Shiite cleric, Muqtada al-Sadr. Maliki hailed the agreement, saying, quote, "The mutual efforts of all have stood against civil war, and thanks to God, we've left it behind our backs." Well, we shall see. Under the terms of this pact, the Iraqi military agreed not to seek U.S. help in restoring order, while militiamen loyal to al-Sadr said they would allow security sweeps but have refused to surrender their weapons, as al-Maliki had demanded. See, the Dow Jones today, it was up considerably today. It was up close to 100 points. I see it finished at minus 44 today, down 44 points to 12,832. Oil is up $1.57, up to $125.80 a barrel. $125.80 a barrel. I wonder where gold ended up today. Let me see here. Gold, gold, gold. Always interested in how much gold is. Not because I have any, because I think it's a good indicator of how things are going. It went down 1470 today. So platinum's up over $2,000 an ounce again. Well, anyway, that's not real important, I guess. What is important, and another thing that the McCain people have talked out of both sides of their mouth about, talking to those, he's a war hero and all this, and he really wants to help our veterans coming home from the Iraq War and the Afghani War. But when push comes to shove, these Republicans don't want to do anything about this GI Bill, this new GI Bill that's coming up. And the cost of so much of this stuff... the cost of caring for our wounded vets is enormous, as you might expect. And it's really a hidden cost of war. and this hidden cost is coming out of hiding right now, that the government's bill to take care of disabled veterans of war is $29 billion a year. And within 25 years, I think that's going to double. And that's with no veterans remaining from either World War II or the Korean War, which we were talking about a hell of a lot of people there. But the number of veterans wounded in battle, either physically or psychological, has grown to 2.9 million. 2.9 million, that's increased 25% since the 9/11 attacks. And according to the Department of Veterans Affairs, the injuries are worse and the disabilities are growing due to aging ex-soldiers, and many vets are quicker to file benefits than in the past. And so what's making things both better and worse at the same time is that advances in treatment are saving the lives of soldiers who would have died during conflicts, like in Vietnam or even the last Gulf War. And unfortunately, a whole lot of them will never recover from wounds such as amputations and traumatic burns or brain injuries. And they've got to be cared for the rest of their lives. And they should be cared for the rest of their lives. We owe them that. But their disabilities, lest anybody think these people are getting a lot of money out of this, monthly checks vary considerably. And if you've got 100% disability, you receive just over $30,000 a year. Just over 30 with 100% disability. For going over to a hellhole in Iraq and fighting for a president that threw you into a meat grinder for absolutely nothing. Barack Obama has pledged that he will help the veterans. He was talking in Charleston, West Virginia yesterday, and I saw some video of it. And I think he's sincere about helping our veterans. As you know, and I know about many of you, you're not enamored with the military adventures that we've been involved with the last few years. But if there's one thing that's certain out of all of it, our troops need to be taken care of. They come first. They need to be taken care of above and beyond. That's above and beyond anything else. That's what comes first. I don't know if this story's ever going to play out. I don't know if we'll ever hear the truth on it. I mean, we know the truth, but I don't know if we'll ever get anybody to really talk about it, any of the networks talk about it. And, of course, that's the story about these so-called military analysts coming on all the networks so many times and pushing the propaganda from the Pentagon. It's appalling. 4,500 times now they've found that these guys appeared. 4,500 times. And, of course, the names are very familiar to most of you that watch cable news. David Grange, he was on CNN and CNN Headline News 921 times. 921 times. We had Donald Shepard was on CNN 713 times. And another one I know all of you know, Barry McCafferty, NBC, MSNBC, CNBC, 642 appearances. All in all, and Wayne Downing, who passed away recently, 270 times. Ken Allard, Thomas G. McInerney. The list goes on and on. 4,500 appearances on news and cable news to pass out propaganda emanating from the Bush administration. They were given their marching orders, many of them working for lobbying firms, many of them working for companies making money off the war. You know the story. 4,500 times. And I'd have to say they should have put a banner up for these guys that said mission accomplished, because they did accomplish their mission. They did go on the media and push Bush's war and say everything that Bush wanted mentioned about it to try to convince the American public, and convince the American public they did for a while, that this war was just and honorable and all that. Quite a number of us never accepted that. But as you well know, because of all the little flags flying out of people's back windows and the little ribbons on the back of their cars, support our troops, we know that these men convinced a hell of a lot of Americans that what we were doing over there was necessary and moral and just. And it was not. And they should be so ashamed. I don't know how some of these guys could ever show their faces again. But I guess as long as they made a pile of money out of it, as long as their employers, their lobbying employers, were happy, and as long as they made the commander-in-chief happy that they took his message out and spread it like manure, that's all that matters. The American people don't matter. The kids they sent over there for cannon fodder don't matter. Just as long as the neocons made out on it, that's all that matters. Disgusting, isn't it? And yet, not being talked about a whole lot. Not being talked about very much at all. Nor, I think, will it ever be. Hey, I just want to make quick mention of this. I don't have know if I have enough time to mention this story, but it's one of these things that, you know, you wonder, are these people are really our friends? Myanmar and Saudi Arabia, you know, all these people that we talk about, we our good friends, the Saudis, religious police, stop schoolgirls from leaving a blazing building because they weren't wearing the correct Islamic dress. In rare criticism of the kingdom's powerful Mutaween police, the Saudi media has accused them of hindering attempts to save 15 girls who died in the fire on Monday. There were 800 pupils inside of the school in the holy city of Mecca when the tragedy occurred, and one witness said he saw three policemen beating young girls to prevent them from leaving the school because they were not wearing the abaya, the headscarf. The Saudi Gazette quoted witnesses as saying the police, known as the Commission for the Promotion of Virtue and Prevention of Vice, had stopped men who were trying to help the girls and warned it is sinful to approach them. The father of one of the dead girls said that the school watchman even refused to open the gates to let the girls out. Relatives of the girls are understandably upset. We spend a lot of time talking about Iran's mullahs, but as bad as they are, and they're bad, they've got more than their match in Saudi Arabia's Mutaween. And they're our friends, the Saudis, you know. We don't cite them for human rights violations. Of course, we have leaders that go hunting with the prince and all that, so we wouldn't want to say anything about the Saudis now, would we? No. Hey, I want to thank you so much for joining us here today on the Guy James Show. Always good to have you here. I said we had a good audience today. Not real talkative, but a good audience today. And it's always a pleasure to come before you every day and talk about the issues of the day. And it's a pleasure to read the emails that we get from you. Do remember, this is a listener-supported program. We appreciate your help very much. And we will talk to you again tomorrow. So thanks to the Head On Radio Network, we're a proud member of. Thanks to Billy Shears, music director. And don't forget, you've heard from the radical right. Oh, yes, you have. And now all that's left is the truth. Tomorrow, gang.
Live from Washington, it's the Inside Scoop, with all the news the government does not want you to know.
Now, here's the host of the Inside Scoop, Congressional Attorney Mark Levine.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. The use of religion to accumulate money or power is as old as, well, religion. The Egyptian pharaohs declared that they were divine, conveniently helping the Egyptians worship their rulers. The Catholic priests in the Middle Ages would sell pardons. You could get salvation, but only at a price. And well into colonial America, and not just in America, but around the world, there were always preachers willing to fleece their flock. So I guess it shouldn't be surprised that there are a whole host of preachers, and it's not just Christian preachers, they're in all religions, though in America they're mostly Christian preachers. We shouldn't be surprised that they are a whole group of people that try to get their parishioners to pay huge sums of money, often money that they can't afford, so that they can live very wealthy lifestyles. As I said, that is as old as religion itself. What may not be as old as religion itself, or maybe it is, but we're going to talk about that with our guest Sarah Poser today, is using these big churches, using these religious forces for political reasons. As I said, the pharaohs did it. Well, the Republicans are getting in on the act. For the last 10 and 20 years, and particularly in most recent times, the Republican Party has allied itself with some of these preachers in order to help the Republican Party. To discuss all of this, I've invited Sarah Posner. She is the author of God's Prophets, Faith, Fraud, and the Republican Crusade for Values Voters. Sarah, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Thanks for having me.
So, explain to me, first of all, who are the big players in this field? Who are the big preachers with mega churches? I don't mean 1,000 members, but tens of thousands of members, the ones that we see on TV, the ones that are making millions off their parishioners.
Well, the big names are people like Kenneth Copeland, Creflo Dollar, Benny Hinn. Those are the people who are under investigation by the Senate Finance Committee for possible abuse of their tax-exempt status for using donations for a for-profit purpose, now, for their own enrichment.
I thought that churches could basically do whatever they want and not have to pay taxes. Their books weren't even audited by the IRS.
Their books can be audited by the IRS, but unlike non-religious nonprofits, they don't have to file tax returns. So their finances are completely secret from the public. Now, the trend in most churches is to open their books and let their members see where their tithes and offerings go. But in these prosperity churches, these Word of Faith churches that I write about in the book, they do not do that. They're completely not transparent and not accountable. So what the Senate Finance Committee is doing is looking into whether they have used donations given for a non-profit purpose for their own